It's Lars. Thank you for checking out my podcast, and have a great day.
I don't think he'll continue to live in this area. I think it's too dangerous. He's had 24-hour security since this happened. We're thankful that the judge protected his address. Everybody in this case, and when I say that, I mean prosecution, defense. To me, it's scary how many death threats we've had.
That is defense attorney Mark Richards, who just hours ago won a not guilty verdict from a jury in Kenosha, Wisconsin, in the self-defense shooting case of Kyle Rittenhouse. And this is the Lars Larson Show. Welcome to First Amendment Friday, when we open up the phone lines and you get a chance to comment on anything you want to. And based on my email, I imagine a few of you want to comment on the Kyle Rittenhouse case. I'll take both naysayers and those who believe that the jury made exactly the right decision. If you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, it's right here every day. And on First Amendment Fridays, every subject is fair game. So just dial me up at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. And as I said, naysayers go right to the head of the line if you've got the guts to call in. We've got a Twitter poll as well. You'll find that at Lars Larson Show on Twitter and also LarsLarson.com. If you don't so much like Twitter, you can go there instead. The vote counts the same. And welcome to the Radio Northwest Network, serving the Pacific Northwest states of Oregon, Washington, and Idaho for the past 21 years with honestly provocative talk. So in August of last year, Kyle Rittenhouse answered the call of friends to help protect businesses in the town of Kenosha, Wisconsin, where his father lives. Now, you understand, American cities, many of them, not just Kenosha, but cities all over this country, saw literally billions of dollars of damage. They saw riots, they saw looting, they saw arson, they saw assaults on police officers, they saw a mob in the streets saying, defund the cops and all cops are bastards. Well, that night in August, Kyle Rittenhouse, while he was trying to help his community, was attacked and he fought back with his rifle. He shot three men. He killed two of them. He never should have been accused of murder, but he was. And today, after days of deliberation, the jury in Kenosha returned its verdict. Listen to this.
The defendant will rise, face the jury, and hearken to its verdicts.
State of Wisconsin versus Kyle Rittenhouse. As to the first count of the information, Joseph Rosenbaum, we, the jury, find the defendant, Kyle H. Rittenhouse, not guilty. As to the second count of the information, Richard McGinnis, we, the jury, find the defendant, Kyle H. Rittenhouse, not guilty. As to the third count of the information, unknown male, we, the jury, find the defendant, Kyle H. Rittenhouse, not guilty. As to the fourth count of the information, Anthony Huber, we, the jury, find the defendant, Kyle H. Rittenhouse, not guilty. As to the fifth count of the information, Gage Grosskreutz, we, the jury, find the defendant, Kyle H. Rittenhouse, not guilty.
Members of the jury, are these your unanimous verdicts? Is there anyone who does not agree with the verdicts as read? Would you wish the jury pulled?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, folks, your job is done.
That is the judge in the case. Now, understand that as those verdicts were being read, not guilty, not guilty, and not guilty, Kyle Rittenhouse began to choke up as he had choked up during some of his testimony on the stand. And at one point, he literally collapsed. He was standing on his feet as the judge asks everybody in a courthouse or courtroom to do as a verdict is delivered. He collapsed. He fell to his knees. He had to be helped back up into his chair, obviously overcome with relief after more than a year and a half of being under the weight of a verdict that could have sent him off to prison. Now, the Rittenhouse charges, understand this, the Rittenhouse charges were political. Understand that the riots in Kenosha followed the death of George Floyd at the hands of police in the month of May. And closer to Kenosha, the wounding by police of an armed suspect named Jacob Blake, who was black. But there was no racial component to the case of Kyle Rittenhouse. He was white. The men he shot were white. The jury was mostly white. The prosecutor was white. His defense attorney was white. Yet racial activists like the NAACP, even today after the jury decision, sought to use it that way. For example, This comment from Mark Banks of the NAACP, and they ought to be ashamed for what the head of their organization is saying. The verdict in the Kyle Rittenhouse case is a travesty and fails to deliver justice on behalf of those who lost their lives as they peaceably assembled to protest against police brutality and violence. They attacked Kyle Rittenhouse. The statement from Banks of the NAACP goes on. This verdict is a reminder of the treacherous role that white supremacy and privilege play within our justice system. In the midst of this disappointing verdict, we must continue to work to ensure that those who seek to harm progress do not find refuge for their illicit acts in a system meant to protect victims. Usually, the NAACP is all about the accused man. But in this case, because the accused man is white and they see a racial component in a crime involving a white alleged murderer and white victims, somehow the NAACP sees that they can make hay. Now, listen to what Mark Richards had to say. He is one of the two attorneys for Kyle Rittenhouse.
We're thankful in more ways than one that the jury finally got to hear the true story. And when I say the media, I'm talking about social media and things like that. The story that came out from the beginning was not the true story, and that was something that we had to work to overcome in court, and we think we did that.
Now, I'll tell you that Richards went on to say he answered a question about something that you don't see in a lot of trials, and I've covered over 100 jury trials and criminal trials about putting his client on the stand. Listen to this.
You want the truth?
Yes.
Had to put him on. It wasn't a close call. But in Wisconsin, if you don't put a client on the stand, you're going to lose, period.
And by the way, Mark Richards did not hold back, the defense attorney, when he talked about the misdeeds of the prosecutor in this case. Listen to that.
I was a prosecutor. Corey was a prosecutor. And I never went after somebody like they did. And when they put on the Kandiri brothers, knowing that they were lying, that is a problem. This isn't, as I said in my closing argument, I'm not going to, you know, it's not a game. And you're playing with an 18-year-old kid's life. And they were willing to put those guys on. Detective Howard and Detective Antaramian had both interviewed them, and in their police reports said, we know you're lying. I can't ask that question when they're on the witness stand of the detective, because one witness can't comment on another. So they put them on. They knew they were lying. And that's garbage.
As far as I'm concerned, Mark Richards is right. Not just that, but the entire charge about Kyle Rittenhouse. And it really put in danger the idea that every single American of every color, every age, every ethnicity, every point of privilege has the simple human right to defend his own life. And now we've seen a jury come back and reinforce that. Coming up in just a moment, Build Back Better is going to leave a lot of Americans trillions of dollars deeper in debt. My take on that coming up next on First Amendment Friday on the Radio Northwest Network. And you're listening to the Lars Larson Show.
That makes a lot of sense. A lot of nonsense.
Right. You're bloody well right. You know you got a right to say.
This is the Northwest Nonsense.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense?
No left-leaning, dead fish rapper bias. No mega TV network liberal agenda. Just the cold hard facts from Lars.
Well, this morning, the House of Representatives, run by the Democrats in the majority for now, but next fall, that's going to change. The House passed the obscenely expensive Build Back Better Act. Yeah, Build Back Socialist is more like it. We can only hope that it runs into a gigantic roadblock in the 50-50 U.S. Senate. Officially, if you listen to the Democrats, it costs $2 trillion. Let me translate it for you, $6,000 for each man, woman, and child in America. But then the math gets more complicated because Congress used some accounting gimmicks to whittle that number down to $2 trillion. like some of the programs in Build Back Better that last for 10 years, only they only put funding in the bill for a couple of years. The real cost, when you add it all in, about $5 trillion. Now, Joe Biden promised it would cut the deficit by $100 billion, that it was effectively free. It would actually be spend all this money and we'll actually save money by spending trillions. If you buy that kind of nonsense, you probably get those emails from Nigeria, too. Pelosi wanted the vote before the Congressional Budget Office came out this week and announced it will bust the budget with $160 billion in new red ink. So Joe Biden said it would put us $100 billion in the black. Instead, it's going to put us $160 billion in new red ink. Biden's lies were only off by about $250 billion. So what's inside the bill? Expanded welfare. In a country with this low an unemployment rate, are you kidding me? Government takeover of child care. And here's one of the best parts. Daycare workers under Build Back Better must be paid the same as your local teachers. So parents, brace your budget because the costs are going to go up dramatically. 11 million illegal aliens get 10 years of amnesty for no reason other than the Democrat Party thinks they'll make great voters. And yes, there are jobs building heavily subsidized electric cars, but only for union members, and that's only about 6% of American workers. Yes, all are equal under Build Back Better. Some just happen to be a little bit more equal than others. Glad to get your phone calls on a First Amendment Friday. Now today's Daily Grill.
Insane.
Are you completely insane?
Ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe they're just really, really stupid.
Find out right now. Brought to you by Les Schwab Tire Centers. Doing the right thing matters.
Today's Daily Grill goes to the city of Seattle, and I have to give full and lavish credit to the man who tipped me to the story, and that is John Carlson's producer, Phil Vandervoort. He said, Lawrence, have you heard about the Lawnmower Man? I said, well, there was a movie a couple of decades ago called Lawnmower Man. No, Ballard, one of the neighborhoods of Seattle, has a guy they call the Lawnmower Man. His name is Charles Woodward, but the reason they call him the Lawnmower Man, he has lined up more than two dozen lawnmowers on the streets, on the sidewalks. He has three cars. He has other equipment at the intersection of 8th Avenue Northwest and 49th. And the neighbors said, hey, there's a lot of noise. There's a lot of mess. They complained to the city. And the city says, you're taxpayers. You live in houses that you actually pay to live in. We're not going to do a damn thing for you. But then the city Department of Transportation came out. They thought the lawnmowers were owned by one of those law-abiding citizens that actually pay their rent and pay their taxes. The man said, I got a letter in the mail saying, you're going to get fines and penalties for breaking the law. Clean up the mess right now. He went to the city's Department of Transportation and said, hey, I can prove to you these are not my lawnmowers. It's the lawnmower man living on the street who owns those lawnmowers. So then the neighbors thought, well, maybe we'll get some action on this mess right now. It went back to the Department of Transportation in the city, and they said, oh, no, now that we know they're owned by a homeless person, we're not going to do a damn thing about it. Hey, if you're homeless, you've got better rights than a tax-paying, law-abiding citizen. Today's best email, but you can always send more to talk at LarsLarson.com. Brought to you by River City Environmental, the leading environmental and emergency services company in the Northwest. Now hiring with full benefits, leading pay, and a signing bonus. You'll find them online at RiverCityUSA.com/careers. Nancy writes in from Medford, listening on the Radio Northwest Network. Lars, what on earth has happened to the extreme left? No longer are fellow human beings human. Everyone has been reduced to an object lesson, a hero to a cause or a villain. The cause is not now one thing. They have become automatons without reason or a heart. Not even zombies, but twisted horror movie puppets, as somebody somewhere is undeniably playing and pulling the strings. Thank heaven the Rittenhouse jury was composed of actual human beings who still value justice and have the courage to stand up for it. Nancy, very nicely said. To your calls on this First Amendment Friday, let's start with David. Hey, David, what's on your mind today?
Lars, how are you? Hey, I'm a big Second Amendment guy. Glad Kyle Rittenhouse was acquitted. I believe he should have been. But I don't want this kid to be a hero. I ultimately think he made a foolish decision to go to a protest full of crazy people with a gun, you know, and being young. I don't think that's a place for a 17-year-old with an AR-15. So that's my point. I don't consider this kid a hero. I think he got himself in a terrible situation. He had to defend himself, but he made a bad choice.
I'm going to tell you, I think you're wrong. Okay, but understand, you've presented a very sensible way. David, I'll cite several examples here in the Northwest. The town of Aberdeen was told that one of these mostly peaceful crowds, you know what mostly peaceful translates as, if you listen to news anchors who use that ridiculous phrase over and over, it means some of them are going to attack you, kill, assault, burn, loot, but most of the crowd will provide cover for the criminals who are doing that. So when towns become convinced there's nothing we can do about it, and the police have been neutered by their city council or their mayor, and they're not going to do anything because the prosecutor has said he's not going to charge anybody with the criminal acts that they've actually committed. Do you know what happens? $2 billion in damage last year alone. 36 people murdered, many, many hundreds sent to the hospital throughout America. That's what happens when towns are cowed by this idea that, number one, the mob can do anything at once. Number two, good citizens should not do anything. Thankfully, David, towns like Aberdeen, and I use them as an example because they were told, we're going to have 50 mostly peaceful protesters show up in your town. And they knew what was going to happen if they didn't respond. So several hundred people from Aberdeen, and this happened in other towns throughout the Northwest, they just showed up and they stood there. And many of them were armed. Some of them carried AR-15, some of them carried guns. They didn't have to point them at anybody. Their mere presence, which, by the way, is also a police tactic. Police know that when they show up at a fight, usually the bad guys stop doing whatever it is they're doing that had the police call to begin with. But if you begin to tell towns, don't defend your town, it's foolish that you're stupid to go down and defend your town. Leave the mob to do whatever they want to do. David, can you see how that ends up in disaster when towns just say, okay, we're at the mercy of the mob. The police won't act, prosecutor won't act, city council won't act, and we're not allowed to even stand there by our presence and stop this kind of activity. They've done it in small towns. Kyle Rittenhouse was largely by himself. There was one friend with him. But you're telling me that if we tell everybody, stay home, don't go down there, it's foolish, let them burn the town. Is that what you want them to do?
Well, absolutely not, but Kyle's 17.
And who cares?
My point is that I think this is an adult situation. I think an adult is...
Well, the adults weren't doing anything to save the town of Kenosha. So if the kids, if a 17-year-old who's a year away from being old enough to sign up for military service says, I'm going to protect my town, then as far as I'm concerned, bully for him. It's First Amendment Friday on the Radio Northwest Network. We'll talk to a former prosecutor next.
There's been so much talk about whether the tears were genuine. All I can say is when we prepared Kyle and we worked on his testimony, there were things we couldn't talk about in my office because it got too emotional and he couldn't handle it. He's in, you know, counseling for PTSD, so he doesn't sleep at night. Remorse, I think, manifests itself some other ways. I don't think he can ever walk out here and say that because of the situation. But I know Kyle Rittenhouse, and I know what he feels.
That is Mark Richards, the defense attorney, and by the way, former prosecutor, but the man who, as a defense attorney, won the not guilty verdict on all five counts for Kyle Rittenhouse. We got the news just a few hours ago, and I thought to get a real perspective on this, I'd invite my favorite former prosecutor, and that's Josh Marquis, who was district attorney for pretty close to 30 years or a little better than that. Josh, welcome back to the program. I want to get your impression of the jury's decision. For a while there, I thought we were going to end up with a hung jury. They deliberated for days. They only ask a few questions, but they did ask a few. And then all of a sudden, they come back, and on a Friday, they make the decision, and it's not guilty on all counts. What do you think of that?
I've had the opportunity to watch most of the trial on Court TV, which has reinvented itself recently after being dormant for several years. And I have to say, I started off with the impression, some of which I still hold. The part I still agree with is I still think that Kyle Rittenhouse was a very immature, stupid young man who made some really bad choices. But that's not the same thing as saying he's a killer or that he broke the criminal law. And from what I saw, I think the jury's verdict was a correct one. He made some really, really bad decisions. It's one thing for, you know, a Korean market owner in Los Angeles to defend their own business. It's another, you know, when you're 17 years old, to arm up with a semi-automatic rifle and a pistol and go down and volunteer to defend someone else's property. That being said, take them as you find them. He was there in Kenosha. There was rioting going on. I'd never known how bad it was until I saw the video. It was very bad. And left-wing extremists were threatening to kill him. He was largely on the run. And although, again, there could have been a number of decisions he could have made to take himself out of it earlier, I think the jury made a correct and I'm sure difficult decision that under the law of self-defense in both Wisconsin and Oregon and most states, that he at that time was acting in self-defense when he shot these guys.
You know, one of the things his defense attorney said today, just a short time ago, is that if the rioters, these people who were attacking Kyle Rittenhouse, had let him simply go to the cops, that's where he was heading when they attacked him the second time. And when he ended up shooting, the total was 3 people shot, 2 people dead. That the defense attorney said if they let him go to the police, there might only be 1 dead person. Instead, it was the rioters' actions that caused him to have to defend himself again. What do you think of that?
Again, I have the advantage that I very rarely have of actually watching a trial that I wasn't participating in, and I think that's how the evidence shook out. I mean, several things struck me. For one thing, the prosecution did a really horrible job.
I want to get to them in a minute.
Okay, and the defense did a pretty good job, but ultimately, as someone who has tried cases, I was only DA for 25 years, by the way. I was a prosecutor for 35, but I was the district attorney for only 25. But as I've often said, and I think I've said this in conversations with you and other people, cases try themselves. In other words, the facts usually bubble to the top. And you can have a very good lawyer or a mediocre one, but, you know, it is what it is. And I think that's what happened in this case.
One more question.
The law, this is not an exotic law, by the way.
No, it's not. But let me get to that. Should, given what we saw in, you know, that the police had access to, within a short time, and they talked to the witnesses. Almost every prosecution witness turned into a defense witness because when asked, did Kyle Rittenhouse shoot you after you pointed a gun at him, the witnesses they had turned into defense witnesses. Should the charges ever have been brought?
It's hard to say because I don't know what was said at grand jury. It's always easy to Monday morning quarterback. I am not impressed with what I saw of the prosecution, and I also am aware I don't know much about the Kenosha office, but right next door is Milwaukee, Wisconsin, which has had a reputation long before the woke DAs like Mike Schmidt or George Gascon or Chaz Boudin in San Francisco of being, you know, the original woke DA. So Milwaukee, Wisconsin has a bad reputation for making decisions as prosecutors.
Okay, but I think you're being too kind to the
prosecutor in this case. Trained in that office. This is not just a
I think these were political charges, and let me make the point this way. Josh, have you ever stood in front of a jury and lied to them knowingly?
No, I would get in big trouble for that.
Okay, hold on. When that prosecutor stood in front of the jury and said, you have no right of self-defense against an unarmed man, is that a lie, meaning that he knew that wasn't true, and he told the jury that anyway?
That is not a correct statement of the law, and he should not have said it, and there could be consequences.
So it's a lie. Okay, when he says, if you bring a gun, if you are carrying a gun, you lose, you forfeit your right of self-defense. Was that a lie to the jury?
Not unless you go on to add that there are circumstances in which you can be acting in self-defense, as Rittenhouse was in this circumstance.
Okay. But in the circumstances he described, was the prosecutor lying to the jury when he said, you have no right of self-defense if you're armed?
A lie means you willfully, you know.
Well, hold on. He's an attorney. Does he know the law?
I would hope so. And
okay.
And
he knows that's not the law. Now, let me get to something else, because the defense attorney brought this up. Have you ever put a witness on the stand where you know the police believe the witness was lying, and you said, I'm going to have the witness get on the stand and say the same things that he told the police, where the police concluded he was lying, and I know there's good evidence he was lying, but I'm going to put him on the stand to tell his lies to the jury. Have you ever done that?
No, because that is a disbarrable offense. It's something that applies equally to defense and prosecutors. It is the absolute no-no. You can put witnesses on the stand if you don't know whether they're telling the truth or you just choose not to address it. But if you have reasonable belief to know that you're putting on perjured testimony, you are committing a very serious ethical violation.
Okay, so when you say, well, you were disappointed in the prosecution, The defense attorney says these prosecutors knew that these witnesses had lied to the police. The police said, we think you're lying. And he put them on anyway. And he said, as the defense attorney, I'm not allowed to ask, didn't you tell the police something else? And didn't they say, we think you're lying? But he said, you're not allowed to have one witness comment on the testimony of another witness.
Well, I disagree with the defense attorney on that. He could have asked the first question. He could impeach them with their prior inconsistent statements. He wouldn't be able to call the officers to say, do you think he was lying to you? But you're stuck with the answer, in other words.
Okay, but if they had to go to those extents, including what did you make of the prosecutor picking up an AR-15 rifle with his finger on the trigger and pointing it at jurors?
I found that unbelievable. I've handled a lot of firearms in courtrooms, and there's usually trigger locks on them. But even with a trigger lock, I probably would be speaking to you from inside a jail cell for contempt. I couldn't detect any safety devices on that weapon.
Even if there was a safety device, everybody who handles firearms knows you treat every gun like it's loaded, even when you know it's not, right?
You don't point an AR-15 at people, no.
Any idea why the judge didn't call him on that?
I have no idea. I mean, judge is a colorful character, but he's 75. He's at the end of his career, and, you know, I think they weren't inappropriate decisions he made.
I mean, I thought Alec Baldwin had taken over the prosecution of the case. Josh, thank you so much. I appreciate your insights. That's 35-year prosecutor, 25-year DA, former district attorney Josh Marquis. We'll be back in a moment. I'll get to your phone calls and emails. It's First Amendment Friday, and you're listening to the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show on First Amendment Friday and live on the Radio Northwest Network, where we serve the Pacific Northwest states of Oregon, Washington, and Idaho with honestly provocative talk on a daily basis. And every single day, naysayers go to the head of the line, although no naysayers calling in. Although I did get this email, and this is why I love my audience so much. Calvin wrote in. I don't even know that Calvin is a regular emailer because I don't recognize his handle. But he said, Lars, Kyle Rittenhouse is guilty and I can prove it. He knows first aid, right? And yet he sat right there and let the prosecutor choke all week long. You know what, Calvin? I think you're absolutely right about that aspect. Let's go to Lynn in Wenatchee, Washington, listening on the Radio Northwest Network. Hey, Lynn, thanks for listening. What's on your mind?
Hi, Lars. Recently, I guess maybe it was yesterday, that in Florida, the governor signed a bill affecting employers. And just so you know, I've in the past been an employer, owning a business. I've been in top management for a couple other businesses, and these are under 100, employees. Uh-huh. So, I want to ask about rights as a business owner. I know, as an individual, we got the unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
Yeah.
When I become a business owner, does that change?
No, if you just ask me that question by itself, do your rights as a business owner change? Your responsibilities change. I mean, as a business owner, you're liable for bad things that happen at the business. You may be liable for bad things that happen to your employees. To some extent, you have greater responsibilities. I think you have the same rights. But if you're talking about the vaccine mandate and the bill that was signed by Governor DeSantis, which I thought was exactly right, say no vaccine mandates. Let's not do that. And you're going to have to fight to preserve the rights and freedoms you have in this country. And all the more so under Joe Biden, and in the case of Washington and Oregon, Kate Brown and Jay Inslee, because they're going to try to relieve you of many of your rights as they possibly can. They're going to run over you with a steamroller if they can. I did want to mention something, Lynn. Do you know where Governor DeSantis signed that bill?
It was at a car dealership.
It was what?
Brandon at a car
Brandon Honda in the town of Brandon, Florida. Now, Lynn, do you know why Governor DeSantis chose Brandon, Florida to sign that bill?
Well, it's pretty obvious.
you've heard the phrase, let's go Brandon, right?
Right, yeah.
Yeah, so, and how it translates, right? We can't say it on the radio, but we all know how it translates.
I do, yeah. And there's so much political divide. But I want to ask you a little bit more about this.
Well, make it quick, though, because we've got other people on First Amendment Friday. What's the question? What's the bottom line question?
Well, as an employer, you know, and you have your employees, and you provide them, you know, with their group health insurance, which is a huge thing for a small business and trying to do that. And if you have, you know, 50 people that work for you and say 45 are vaccinated or 5 aren't, and the 45 people are saying, you know, hey, we don't want our group insurance to go up if somebody gets really sick. The unvaccinated might have a much higher viral load. We just want to establish some, you know, benchmarks for the best protection and defense so we can keep our business.
Well, as a business owner, you can make whatever, I mean, to a certain extent, as a business owner, you can make any rules you want. The question is, do you want to make that decision, or do you want Jay Inslee to make it for you, or Kate Brown?
Well, I'm talking about DeSantis saying that there's certain things the business can't do, and I think the business should be able, or an employer should be able to decide anyway. Either it's, you know, I mean, I'm not saying I am
well,
for.
As I understand his bill is against mandates, and his bill is against mandates, Lynn. It says, as a town, like Kate Brown has a bunch of mandates on vaccines, on masks, so does Jay Inslee. What he doesn't want is mandates from government telling private individuals, both business owners and individual citizens, what to do. Lynn, thank you very much. I appreciate the call. Let's go to Pete in Blaine, all the way up by the Canadian border. Pete, welcome to First Amendment Friday. What's on your mind?
Good afternoon or good morning, Lars. I'm very disappointed with these individuals who are chastising Kyle for being naive or misguided or functioning inappropriately. This is coming from an 81-year-old Marine who, at Kyle's age, virtually 63 years ago, enlisted in the Marine Corps while in high school. And I'm thinking back as a 17-year-old, becoming 18-year-old,
yeah,
and wanting to do something. And then when I watched that young man on the witness stand and how composed he was in answering these questions from the prosecutor and watching what he went through when he was on that site.
Yeah.
My opinion is that he is the type of person that we want as a young man growing up and taking responsibility for things. We're all a bit misguided. I'm misguided at 81. I'm not challenging you.
I know.
But there was a general
I hear what you're saying. We should be proud of people who take initiative to protect their community. Did Kyle Rittenhouse have a right to be on the streets of that city or any city in America? Yes. Did he have a right to have
absolutely
a rifle there? Yes. Did he have a right to defend his own life? Yes. And anybody who says otherwise doesn't believe in the American standard of self-defense. It's First Amendment Friday. It's the Radio Northwest Network. It's the Lars Larson Show. And your calls are welcome at 866-439-5277. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show, and welcome back to the Radio Northwest Network. You know, for a long, long time, I mean, I've been doing this show almost 25 years in the Northwest. People have said, why don't you do more debates? And I said, we try to. And you say, what do you mean you try to? I say, well, we try to arrange debates, but here's the thing. It takes two to tango. And if I invite one side on and then I invite the other side and the other side doesn't show up, then you can't have a debate. And that happens far too often. We invite Democrats every single day of the week. We're asking Democrats and liberals and progressives, whatever label you want to put on them, to come on the show. And most of them, they don't do that. So today we've got kind of a unique opportunity. As you know, I've taken the position that I think my member of Congress, 3rd District Congresswoman Jamie Herrera Butler, who is also welcome back on this show, just not today, I think she ought to be replaced. I think she's turned into a rhino or worse. In fact, I think the GOP ought to kick her out. So I'd like to see her replaced. And there are a great number of people on both the left and the right who are seeking that position. And I have two of them with me today. Joe Kent, who you've heard before, is a retired Special Forces warrant officer and the Gold Star husband of fallen soldier Shannon Kent, who was killed by ISIS. He's the GOP candidate, one of the GOP candidates. The Democrat And I have to say, it's great to get a Democrat to come on the show, is Brent Henrich, who is a husband, father, former project manager, and a cinema executive. Gentlemen, can you both hear me, and can the audience hear you? Joe?
I can hear you just fine, Lars. Thank you.
Brent?
You're coming in 5x5.
Very good. So here's what I want to do. We're going to have a little debate here, and people have said, Lars, you're going to be unfair. You're not going to give Brent a chance because he's a Democrat. No, it's going to be the same questions. We're going to start out. I'm going to afford each candidate an opportunity to do 90 seconds. You can do less if you want, as an open, and then we'll get into some specific issues that I think are important in this race for the 3rd District member of Congress from Washington State. So, because folks are going to accuse me of pro-GOP bias, I'm going to let the Democrat go first. Brent Henrich, the microphone and the floor is yours. You've got 90 seconds.
Well, Lars, I just want to thank you for this forum, and I've never spoken with Joe Kent before. Joe, I'm well aware of your service, and I just want to say thank you for your service, and I'm sorry for your loss of your wife in service. But let's move on. I'm Brent Henrich. I'm running for Congress. Our nation was founded on the principle of a government of, for, and by the people. I am ready to listen to you while we emphasize by the people. We need to be doing more for the people in Southwest Washington and across our great nation. We must address our current climate crisis, make sure people have access to good-paying jobs, and provide equitable access to whole-person health care. There was a time in our history when many of our political leaders gave us true, meaningful inspiration to make our country a better place. We looked up to them. Our children aspired to be like them. They had integrity and courage. They were worthy of our respect. They worked hard for you. Many still do, but far too many don't. I'll work for you, the people of Southwest Washington. I will join the broader effort of nationwide responsible service to the people of the United States by working with other congressional leaders. We all have strengths, and one of mine is compassionate listening and leading with empathy. I want to know what matters to you, so I can work for your interests as your interests are mine. You're the reason government exists, and it's time 90. For leaders to work on their behalf.
Brent Henrich, that's your 90. Joe Kent, would you like to take 90 seconds to tell the people why they should give you that seat in Congress?
Absolutely. First off, Lars, thank you so much for hosting this debate, and thank you very much, Brent, for agreeing to participate. According to the recent polling, Brent and I are far and away the front runners in this race. We're going to advance past the primary and to the general. So congrats to Brent on his grassroots campaign so far. My name is Joe Kent. I had the honor of serving this country for a little over 20 years as a Green Beret. Most of that was in combat, did 11 combat deployments for this nation. I also served as a foreign policy advisor to President Trump after my late wife was killed fighting ISIS in Syria. After that, I returned here to Yakult, Washington to raise my 2 sons. I'm running against Jamie Herrera Butler because she has betrayed our values and neglected her responsibilities. Not only did she side with the Democrats to impeach President Trump, she voted against building a wall to protect our southern border. She voted against repealing Obamacare. She voted in favor of illegal immigrants and continues to vote for endless foreign wars that have cost so many great Americans their lives, including my late wife. As Antifa was burning down Portland and marching into Vancouver, she voted to prevent President Trump from responding and restoring law and order with the National Guard. And right now, as many Washingtonians are facing the choice between taking the jab or losing their job, she's absolutely silent because she's taking money from big corporate PACs. It's been 5 years since she's held a public town hall where voters can hold her accountable. She's failed to deliver real solutions to fix the I-5 corridor, revitalize our ports, and restore our fisheries and timber industries. Those are issues that I will lead on. I look forward to discussing those issues and others. Thank you.
Absolutely. Now, gentlemen, I want to start you off with something general. I'm not going to do the cutie pie question that some people do, but Brent, I'm going to start with you because Joe just went. I'm going to ask you, do you believe America is headed towards socialism and communism because of the kinds of things like Build Back Better and the other initiatives of the Biden administration? And then I'll get Joe Kent's response in just a moment. Are we headed for socialism and communism? And is that a good thing? And if so, why?
Well, I absolutely do not believe we're headed for socialism or communism. Social Security is a social program. Medicare is a social program. Expanding on social programs is in no way leading us to a path of socialism.
All right, Joe, how would you respond to that? Are we headed towards socialism, and is that a good or a bad thing?
So we are on a very slippery slope right now towards socialism, communism, and really just authoritarian control. So with COVID-19 pandemic, the far left got to jumpstart a lot of their most devious plans, from shutting down the vast majority of independent businesses and shifting that over to a corporate oligarchy. Like we've seen, no major corporations have been affected by COVID, whereas we've had the largest transfer of wealth from individual entrepreneurs to this corporate class. We're also looking at the way that big tech is working in conjunction with government to silence dissenting voices. And right now we're seeing the weaponization of the Department of Justice to go after, you know, just moms and dads have the audacity to show up at their parents, at their children's school board meetings. So I think right now we are heading towards being a very authoritarian state, which is what the end game for all communist or socialist types of regimes are. So I'm very concerned about the state of this country right now. And I think Jimmy Herb Butler is not fit to defend us.
I agree. I want to ask you both a yes-no question as we head toward the break, and then we'll come back. We're going to spend the whole hour doing this. Brent, first for you. House of Representatives voted for so-called Build Back Better. It adds up to $60,000 in new debt for every single American family. If you were a member of Congress, would you have voted for Build Back Better as the House did last night?
I disagree on the $60,000 per person debt increase. I would have voted for it.
You would have voted for it. Joe Kent, would you have voted for that Build Back Better, which is $6 trillion at the end of the day and is going to add about $60,000 per family? Yes or no?
No, absolutely not.
Absolutely. We're conducting a debate. The candidates are Joe Kent, the Republican, Brent Henrich, who is the Democrat. It is about the 3rd Congressional District in Washington State, and we'll be back in just a moment on First Amendment Friday. You've got the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a First Amendment Friday, and just for 1 hour, we're going to have a debate between two of the candidates seeking the office, the 3rd Congressional District office currently held by Rhino Republican Jamie Herrera Butler. And as I said, Congresswoman Butler has been on this program many times before. She's been on since I suggested that she ought to be replaced, and I hope she'll be on before the voters make the final decision. But today, I have the opportunity to have both GOP candidate Joe Kent and Democrat candidate Brent Henrich. And Brent, I have to give you some props. There aren't a lot of Democrats that'll come on this program. You've got the guts to do that. But just before the break, I said we're going to talk about different subjects. I brought up Build Back Better. And I want to ask you about that, but before I ask you that, you expressed some doubt about how I got to the $60,000 per family that in debt that is going to be brought about by this Build Back Better passed by the House last night. Here's how you do the math. Every time the federal government spends $1 trillion, a trillion divided by all the people in this country, 330 million, is $3,000 each for every man, woman, and child in this country. This is going to cost over $5 trillion. I rounded it off. $5 trillion times five times $3,000 per man, woman, every man, woman, and child is $15,000. So if you have a family of four, that is $60,000. And I just wanted to make sure that you knew I wasn't just throwing out funny math. Are we ready for something that borrows $60,000 on behalf of every single family of four in this country to provide what the president says is a way to build America back better? So, about the subject of Build Back Better, I hope it gets, I have a bias, I hope it gets stopped in the Senate. But I want to ask you, Brent, and since Joe went last on the before the break, I'll let you go first on this one. Is that amount of spending for the things they propose to spend it on good for America?
You're talking about the spending without the revenue portion, though. So that's comparing apples and oranges. The CBO has not scored it that way. And so it's the numbers you are making up are using only part of the equation.
Well, I'm not okay, but we can debate the numbers if you want, because the total amount of spending the Biden administration proposes this year, if Congress approves all of it, the $1.8 trillion already spent in March, the $1.2 on infrastructure, this one officially at $2 trillion, although a lot of it is, you know, they did some accounting magic in there to get it down from five. It's really $5 trillion. And then you have the regular bill for running the federal government at about three. It totals up to between $8 and $9 trillion this year. They don't begin to have that much money coming in, which means that they have to borrow it to make it happen. But if we're going to spend that amount of money, is it a smart thing? Is that amount of spending good for America or bad for America? You're free to argue either way. 1 minute.
We need to get America back on track and going forward again, and that's what the Build Back Better plan is for. I support the Build Back Better plan.
Okay. Let me ask Joe Kent, is spending that amount of money a good idea?
No, spending that amount of money that we haven't, that we can't pay for is absolutely irresponsible. It's putting on the backs of our children and our grandchildren. Look, we do need a vast amount of infrastructure improvement in this country, but the current Build Back Better plan only has about somewhere in the ballpark of 10% that actually goes to physical infrastructure. The rest, especially the rechargeable car stations, all of that is nothing but a $300 billion payday for the Chinese Communist Party, the people that crashed our economy by sending us COVID. That is a payday for them because they manufacture all the raw earth materials that make a lot of these batteries. What we need to focus on to get our economy back on track is bringing back American jobs here in the United States. That is the systemic issue that we're seeing right now with this debacle with our supply chain. The biggest issue we have right now with our economy is that we don't produce anything here. Our number one geostrategic foe, the Chinese Communist Party, who is in an economic war with us right now, controls our means of production and our supply line. And we also rely on them to buy off our debt bonds. So we're counting on the Chinese Communist Party to continue to fund this by buying off our debt bonds. We can't print enough money. We're not going to bring in enough money. Our only solution then is to take out more debt. And we're going to rely on the Chinese Communist Party for that. It's completely and totally reckless and irresponsible.
Okay, let me let Brent go next on the next one about Build Back Better. Joe Biden made the promise as candidate. He doubled down on it as president to say, I will not raise taxes for those below 400,000 individual income, not even household, individual income. The latest scoring of this plan says it's going to raise taxes on 20 to 30% of the middle class. Let me ask you, Brent, I'm guessing you probably voted for Joe Biden. I don't think Joe Kent voted for Joe Biden, but I believe you might have, and you could tell us if you choose. Does this break Joe Biden's promise not to tax below 400,000?
I know what you're saying, and I believe that Joe Kent said he did or didn't. I actually can't remember when he was a Democrat in Oregon in the last election in the primary, and I understand his and fully believe his Rush Limbaugh idea of registering as a Democrat to play around in primaries, and that's fine. I don't believe Joe Biden has broken a promise. The numbers you're talking about are there are certain situations, 20% of people under 400,000 may have their taxes go up by $100. I did see those score numbers last night. People are pouncing on them as if it was a penny or $100 or $5,000. I don't believe that's a broken promise. It wasn't intentional. It's just how the math broke down, and there wasn't a way to be able to make it equitable for everyone. And yes, some people are going to pay $100, $220 a year more that are in that $75,000 to $400,000 range of income. But I don't believe that's a broken promise in any way.
Joe, do you think it's a broken promise? Joe Kent?
No, absolutely. It's 100% a broken promise. The problem is it's not just the taxes that will be raised. Everything is more expensive right now with inflation due to Biden's irresponsible behavior, shutting off the Keystone XL pipeline. Look at the price of the pump. The price of gas has gone up in our cars, and that results in the foods that we consume and every single service that we use that's imported. All those costs have gone up. So really the folks that are in the working class that are struggling to get into the middle class families, folks that are just now on two incomes probably earning that $400,000 because they work hard their entire life. Not only are their taxes going to go up, but everything else is more expensive. So Joe Biden has broken promises, and he's breaking our economy.
Both of you, I'm going to have to give you 30 on each of these, but it should be easy. Should we give, as this bill does, effective amnesty to 11 million illegal aliens? Brent, should we do that?
I haven't seen totally that portion, but I am aware of the fact that the people that were covered by DACA are getting the ability to have work permits in the United States for a 5-year period, and they can renew those permits. I have not gone through every line of that portion of the bill.
Joe, do you have a 30-second answer for me?
I do. No, absolutely not. We should not be giving amnesty to any illegal immigrants ever under any circumstances. Not only is there a national security implication here, but there's also a major economic security implication. These illegal immigrants are coming in there, taking jobs away from the working class, the most diverse class that we have that's struggling to make ends meet every day. That is who the illegal immigrants take jobs from. And that's why the corporate donor class from the left and the right love illegal immigration so much, because they can virtue signal about minimum wages but never pay it.
When we come back in a moment, we'll continue our debate. Brent Henrich and Joe Kent running for Congress. We'll talk about vaccines and masks and mandates coming up next on the Radio Northwest Network and the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's First Amendment Friday. I'll get back to your calls a bit later, but I have a great opportunity today. And believe me, we'd love to do more of these, not just during election time, but even on, you know, specific subject matter, you know, whether it's fluoridation, whether it's global warming, climate change, whatever. I'd be glad to have debates on this show on a regular basis. The sad thing is that many times the left does not want to step forward and actually take tough questions. But today I have great opportunity because Democrat Brent Henrich is with me, husband, father, former project manager, cinema executive running for Congress in the 3rd Congressional District in Washington, currently held by Rhino Republican Jamie Herrera Butler, and Joe Kent, the GOP, one of the GOP candidates who is running for that seat as well. Gentlemen, I want to move to masks and mandates and vaccines. Let me start with Joe Kent. Joe, should any government, and let's start just in isolation, should any government mandate the wearing of masks, either in public places, in private places like restaurants and stores? Should any government mandate that citizens must wear a mask to be out in public?
No, absolutely not. I mean, I think we've just seen the government overstep their bounds consistently with these mask mandates. They cannot dictate what you put on your face, and they shouldn't be able to dictate access to public facilities that our taxpayer dollars go to. This is right now, the government has been so dishonest with everything involving COVID. There's just such a lack of public trust that everything right now just appears to be another control measure to see how much more control the government can get. The masks are just the most overt symbol of that.
All right, let me ask Brent Henrich, the Democrat. Brent, should any government, and I'm talking about Joe Biden, Jay Inslee, Kate Brown, should or a mayor or a county commission, should any of those governments mandate the wearing of masks to go out in public?
Well, I believe all of those people you spoke of have a duty to protect the overall population. They're using the best data they can get from public health experts that show that wearing a mask slows the spread, doesn't completely stop it. And yes, they are well within their rights to protect the general population by saying, wear a mask. It doesn't harm anyone, and it helps the overall population.
I've got to ask a clarifying question. You mentioned they're well within their rights. Can you tell me where they get the authority to tell me to slap a mask on my face to go out in public? Because I can't find it, and I've been looking for it for a year. Brent? Can you tell me where you find that authority? You said they're within their rights.
We elect them to protect and defend and use their role for the overall good of the citizens, and that's what they're doing.
I want to get Joe's answer in a moment, but I think protect and defend is the cops. Most of the state officials we're talking about take an oath that says, I will faithfully execute the laws of the states. Can you tell me where a governor or a mayor or a city council gets the authority and in faithfully executing the laws to tell me to put a mask on my face before we even get to vaccines? Where do they get that authority?
I do not have the line, so I'm not going to try and make it up.
You
and I both know.
No, go ahead, Brent. Tell me, what do we both know? Because I don't know that Jay Inslee has that authority. They keep talking about mandates, but a mandate is not a law passed by the lawmakers. You still believe in that part of the system, right?
Yes, I believe in that part of the system, but they are the executives of the states, and they are making decisions for the overall betterment of their citizens.
All right, before I go to Joe, let me ask you, Brent, do they have the authority to tell you to stick a needle in your arm and another one as boosters are required? Do they have that authority too?
In certain scenarios, yes. I mean,
No, we're not talking about certain scenarios. They're extending vaccine mandates to say you can't work, You can't go to places. You can't check into a hotel. You can't go anywhere unless you're vaccinated. Do they have that authority? And so where do they get it? And how far can they go with it, Brent?
Again, they are looking out for the general well-being of the overall population, and they are doing everything they can to help the overall population. And I believe they do have the authority to make that decision.
Okay, Joe, I want to get your response. I have a feeling it might actually mirror mine. I mean, I do have a bias here, not just in favor of Joe Kent, but Joe, do these elected elites have the authority to tell you to wear a mask or take a jab or two or three or six?
No, absolutely not. It's nowhere in the Constitution, the federal Constitution, the state Constitution. It's an absolute infringement upon our rights. Day one that I'm in Congress, I am going to present legislation that outlaws vaccine mandates, tying your vaccine status to your employment. We have to start standing up and saying no. If we continue to bend the knee and let these tyrants continue to tell us what to do with masks and vaccines, we are going to be on that continual slope towards authoritarianism.
All right, let's go to energy. Brent Henrich, the Democrat, let me ask you this. Should we move away from fossil fuels that currently provide 2/3 of our electricity and all of our transportation in America when we don't have replacements for them? Should we do that?
We should be working towards that, and that's in Build Back Better to address climate change, to move to renewable energy. We need to move our vehicle fleets to electric that can be powered by renewably made energy that does not add to the global climate crisis.
Well, I'm curious about that. These electric cars that we're going to buy all hundreds of billions of dollars worth of car chargers for, where are they going to get the electricity when 2/3 of the grid comes from fossil fuels right now?
That's why we're talking about increasing solar and wind energy. New advancements in battery technology will allow us to generate, solar and store it for use in the evenings, for when the wind is blowing, to store it for those days when everybody wants to talk that it's not windy.
Let me ask Joe what he thinks of that. Joe, does that make sense to you?
No, we should not be killing off our fossil fuels industry. I mean, Joe Biden was completely reckless on a national security standpoint from killing off the Keystone pipeline. We need to continue to explore and go back to being energy independent and become a net exporter of our resources like natural gas and oil. This strengthens our economy. This also strengthens our nation and makes it so that we don't need things from OPEC, from the Middle East, from Russia. It takes away a lot of power from a lot of bad actors. I'm for exploring new means of green production, but that needs to be done here in America and not until it is ready to replace what we have at hand, the fossil fuels.
All right, let me move to an event today. The jury came back today in the self-defense shooting case of Kyle Rittenhouse. The jury decided he was not guilty of any crime, and they said, you can now go, Mr. Rittenhouse. Let me start with Brent. Brent, did the jury make the right decision or the wrong decision, and why?
I wasn't on that jury, and in this country, we have the presumption of innocence until proven guilty in a court of law. I saw things on social media that were presented in one way. What the jury saw directly, I did not watch every moment of that trial. I trust that our judicial system is set up, that you get a jury of 12 of your peers to look at evidence that's presented and to look at a defense, and they made that decision. It okay. doesn't necessarily comport with what I've seen, but I was not on that jury, and if I'm ever in this situation, I would like a jury of 12 of my peers to look at all of the evidence and make their decision based on that evidence presented at a trial.
Joe, about 30 seconds. It's going to have to be quick. Did the jury make the right decision?
Yes, the jury made the right decision. What I want to point out is that obviously Kyle acted in self-defense, but the reason why Kyle Rittenhouse had to be out there defending his community is because our establishment failed. The Democrats egged on and even paid for Antifa, BLM to go out and riot in these communities, and representatives, Republicans like Jamie Herrera Butler, voted against stopping that violence. They tied President Trump's hands during a time of crisis. So this is a man-made catastrophe by our establishment, and this is why we need to get rid of people like Jamie Herrera Butler.
We're going to be back in just a moment. Joe Kent, the GOP candidate, one of the GOP candidates for Congress, and Democrat Brent Henrich are with me. We'll continue this debate, and you'll hear their closing arguments in just a moment. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. We're having a little debate for an hour, and then next hour we'll get to calls on a First Amendment Friday. I've got Joe Kent with me, the GOP candidate, one of them, running to replace Jamie Herrera Butler, who I think richly deserves to be replaced. We've also got Brent Henrich, who is a Democrat. And I applaud him for being a Democrat with the guts to come on the program. Gentlemen, I want to afford up to 2 minutes for closing statements. But before we get to that, let me start with you, Brent. Is China a threat to the U.S. economically, militarily, and culturally? And if not, why not? If so, why so? And that'll give the question to Joe. And if you can keep it to about a minute, I think we can still get you about a minute and a half for a closing argument. What do you say about China?
Right now, I believe China is more of a talking point and a buzzword than anything else. We have, I agree with Joe, our economy is currently dependent upon goods manufactured in China. I do not see them as the geopolitical adversary that he portrays them as. We have a symbiotic relationship right now. Is that good or bad? It definitely needs to be looked at, but I don't see them as storming our shores as it seems he believes is happening.
Joe, what's your response to that? Is China a threat to the U.S. economically, militarily, and even culturally?
Yeah, China is at war with us right now. It's not a war where they're going to storm our shores by any means. China is, they are the masters of asymmetrical warfare. So they are in an economic war with us right now, and using their bridge to the economy, they have gotten into our culture. And what they're doing right now is they have the control of world manufacturing. They're also the ones that we rely on to buy off our debt bonds. So really, at a time and place the Chinese Communist Party is choosing, they could threaten our status as the prime reserve currency holder. That would bring down our economy and make 2008 look like a walk in the park, really. But right now, China has issues of their own. And what's happening is our elites, some of our hedge funds on Wall Street, are using our pension money to bail out China. And so we have a major issue with our elites in our country and how they are deferential to China in this global system. That's why I am an America First advocate. We must onshore and produce everything that we need here so that we do not rely on our number one geostrategic foe who has been at war with us ever since we allowed them into the world community.
Brent, one of these days I want you to come back on the show. Not that I don't love Joe, but I'd love to have you come back on the show and we could talk about some of these issues at greater length. But I'm going to give you a minute and a half to do your wrap-up, and then I'll do the same for Joe. Since you got started first, Joe gets the last word. Brent, go right ahead.
Well, thank you again, Lars, for having me on your show to discuss these important topics and issues and allowing me to present what I can offer to Washington's 3rd District and its constituents. Joe, again, it was nice to meet you and have somewhat of a discussion. And again, thank you for your service. I think if nothing else, this debate's shown how very different Joe and I are. About the only thing we agree on is we both want to represent this district. I've been accused of being a single-issue candidate, and in a way, I suppose I am. My single issue I'm running for is the people of the 3rd to work every day to improve their lives. We're stronger together. Division and strife will not build this country back better. We can't let ourselves slide backwards. We must keep working to move forward with a firm resolve. It takes action. It takes all of us working together. I can't do this without you. No one person can. I need all of you to join with me and help me flip Washington's 3rd.
Joe, would you like to make your final closing argument to voters about why they should vote for you if you end up with if you end up in that position in the general election next fall? Joe Kent, did we lose Joe? Joe, go ahead. Couldn't hear you for a moment.
Yep. Thank you, Lars, for hosting this debate, and thank you, Brent, for the spirited conversation. I think while we don't agree on most things, I think we can agree that the people of our district know that Jamie Herrera Butler must go. Jamie represents the corporate establishment that has done nothing but fail us. From shipping our manufacturing jobs overseas to crippling our timber industry to spilling our blood and treasure in endless wars to failing to secure our elections, Jamie Herrera Butler has failed to look out for anyone but herself and the corporate ruling class of donors. All of Jamie's failures have resulted in the left, led by Joe Biden and Jay Inslee, assaulting our sovereignty at every level, from vaccine mandates to our kids being forced to wear masks at school, as they're taught anti-American doctrine to the assault on our southern border. As your congressman, I will end these assaults and lead an American revival in our district. At the center is strengthening the American family. To protect our individual sovereignty, I will introduce legislation on day one to make vaccine mandates illegal. To restore the sovereignty of families, I will fight for school choice and school vouchers, putting parents in charge of the children's education and not the state. To strengthen families, I'm going to fight for enhanced child tax credit deductions of up to $10,000 per child for families that have one parent working a full-time job and not receiving state assistance. This is going to allow one parent to stay home if they choose to do so. We also have to strengthen our families and our economy by bringing back manufacturing and deregulating our natural resources industries. We have everything we need at our hands here to lead a great American revival of the economy and of national spirit. Please join our movement at JoeKentForCongress.com. I humbly ask for your support and your vote. Thank you. God bless.
That's Joe Kent. He's running as a Republican for Jamie Hurra Butler's seat. Brent Henrich is the Democrat. Brent, I want to ask you a question outside of the debate. What should voters make of the fact that nearly every Democrat in the Northwest is afraid to come on and simply answer hard questions like you just did for half of this last hour?
Well, I can say that every Democrat in this area advised me not to, but I have to be able to talk to every voter if I'm going to try and represent every voter in Congress. And this was the forum I was given, and I am taking every chance to talk to everyone I can.
Well, why don't you go back and tell your Democrat friends, stop being cowards, and we'll be glad to have you on the air. You're listening to First Amendment Friday. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a First Amendment Friday, and we're live on the Radio Northwest Network. That's 24 stations around Oregon, Washington, and Idaho. For 21 years, we have served this region with honestly provocative talk. And every week, one day a week on Fridays, we open up the phone lines. Today's Twitter poll, is Joe Biden's Build Back Better worth the $60,000 in debt for every single American family that it's going to cost? I would say no to that question. You can vote any way you like at Lars Larson Show or at LarsLarson.com. Brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at UltimateTruckService.com. Yesterday's poll, should Oregon put its planned gas tax increase on hold? It's supposed to hit January 1, 2 cents a gallon. Not a lot, but gas is already so expensive. 89% of you agreed with me and said yes. Only 11% of you said, no, let the state go ahead and take more of your money. In any case, on a First Amendment Friday, I want to get to your calls. Let's start out with Chuck. Hey, Chuck, thanks for listening on KPNW and the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind?
Good afternoon, Lars. Hey, you know, people, you just mentioned it right there when you talk about gas. I think people are looking at this all wrong. Forget driving down the road for a minute. Forget trucking. Do they realize that 95% of the world needs oil to just exist? You've got your medical equipment, your tires, your roads, clothing, glasses, you know, Tupperware parties. God forbid a woman couldn't have a party. But, you know, they don't look at it that way. Just think about just, can I drive from point A to point B? That's the least of our concerns. But I just wish people would think of it more on the total scale, unless they want wooden wheels again, like buckboards.
I couldn't agree with you more, Chuck. And by the way, I think about one-third of all the oil that's produced on planet Earth is used in transportation. The other two-thirds, I believe this is the right ratio, is used in industrial processes, things like fertilizers and that sort of thing. If you don't have oil, this society does not eat and it does not move. Let me bring on Pastor Lou Wooten. Hey, Pastor, welcome to the program. I got a lot of emails from your followers. They said you've got some kind of event coming up. What is it?
Yeah, it's Freedom March 2. We did one last weekend, and we're doing it again this weekend.
Where are you marching, and what for? What's the specific cause? Is there one?
Yeah, the specific cause, yeah, absolutely. You know, as a church in the community, it has to do with our civil liberties that have been stripped away. The civil, you know, so it's kind of almost civil rights in that we've had people that have had very strongly held religious beliefs that have been fired from their jobs and because of the mandates.
Okay, where do people form up if they want to join your effort?
And that's going to be in front of the Capitol at noon.
Capitol of Oregon? Capitol of Oregon, Pastor?
Yes, the Capitol of Oregon, I'm sorry. Yes.
Well, we serve a three-state region, so we got to take care of everybody. Yes. What time? Tomorrow?
Tomorrow, noon 2 to 4.
Very good. Pastor Wooten, thanks very much. I appreciate the call. Hey, I want to mention a story. And I have to give some credit to Como Television and Como Radio up in Seattle, our sister station to KVI, our affiliate station. I thought this story was fantastic. In fact, I'd love to talk to a guy by the name of Owen Fitzpatrick. Now, Owen Fitzpatrick and his wife or significant other, they run a place down in White Center, which is south of Seattle. Nice community. I've had friends who've lived there. And it's a yoga studio. So here's what happens. Apparently Thursday night, I believe it was, he pulls up in front of his business in his car with his toddler son in the car, in a car seat. And the arrangement is, like I've suggested to so many people, that he and his wife share. They make sure that, you know, somebody is with the child at all times. So he runs inside intending to let his wife run back out, get in the car and drive home. So it's split shifting, right? And he runs inside, he leaves the car running, but he doesn't lock it. Now, his phone is on in the car because the toddler's asleep. And if the toddler wakes up, he wants his parents to be able to talk to the toddler on the phone. A thief comes by and jacks the car. And you know what this guy did? Owen Fitzpatrick comes running out. His car's been stolen. His toddler's son is inside the car. He starts to chase. He talks a guy into loaning him his car, you know, like happens in the movies. Hey, give me your car. I got to chase that guy. Tries to find him. Can't. Comes back to the yoga studio. Realizes my phone's in the car. I can use the Find My Phone app on the car, on the phone. He finds out where it is, takes his wife's minivan, and goes out to track down the thief who's stolen his car, but more importantly, his toddler son inside the car, and tries to cut him off. He said, he was quoted as saying, I tried to cut him off, but he squeaks by me, and I just clipped the back end of the car, his car, with his wife's minivan. The thief kept going, weaving in and out of traffic. At one point, they got boxed in, and the father jumps out of his van, runs over. He's got his window down. I grab a hold of him and start beating on him a little bit. That sounds like a great dad. He manages to catch the bad guy. Absolutely amazing. And I thought he deserves all the credit and props and kudos in the world. If I get a chance to talk to Owen Fitzpatrick next week, we'll look forward to doing that. But anyway, congratulations and what a great dad to protect his family in that way. To your calls now, let's go to Kathy. Hey, Kathy, welcome to the program. What's on your mind on a First Amendment Friday?
Oh, hey, Lars. I was just thinking about the Build Back Better plan. And yeah. Is it not true that they're going to hire like 80,000 IRS agents to audit small businesses to help pay the deficit on this?
Well, here's the problem with that, Kathy, and we've dug into that before. Almost every time the Democrats want more money, they say if we only hired a whole bunch of IRS agents, $80 billion worth, that they would bring in more than $80 billion by squeezing taxpayers for, you know, monies that the IRS hasn't managed to collect with the vast bureaucracy they already have. The problem is, every time they've tried this, it doesn't pencil out. They're suggesting that you can go squeeze more blood out of that rock, and it ain't there, at least based on the past experience. I think what Biden wants is he wants a massively bigger IRS so they can monitor American citizens and your bank accounts all the way down to just average-sized bank accounts. I mean, they say if your bank account has more than $10,000 business done in it during a year, well, Kathy, right. How many people who pay their own rent and buy their own groceries don't have at least $10,000 pass through their bank account in the course of a year? They want to monitor Americans through the IRS and use it as a political weapon, as the Democrats have been known to do before.
Right, but aren't they also just going to target small businesses and audit them?
They're going to target everybody. But the problem is, right, the IRS is already fairly good at collecting all the taxes that are owed. And there isn't a lot of extra squeeze that you can get out of that just by hiring a bunch of additional agents. But what the Democrats get out of it is more government employees. You grow the government, you shrink the citizen liberties. And when they say, oh, we're going to pay for this plan by just hiring enough IRS agents to squeeze enough taxpayers, it's not going to happen. In any case, I'll be back with more of your First Amendment Friday phone calls in just a moment, and we'll talk about whether or not an elephant should have the same rights as a human being. Believe it or not, it's a real question. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to The Lars Larson Show. It's First Amendment Friday. I'll be glad to get back to your phone calls and emails shortly, but I spotted this story, and I sent it to my friend Wesley Smith. I thought this story was so crazy, but it tells us where we're going in this world at this point. So bear with me on this. Wes is an author and a senior fellow at the Discovery Institute Center on Human Exceptionalism. Welcome back to the program, Wesley.
Thank you, Lars. I'm having a hard time hearing you.
Are you? It almost sounds like you're on a speakerphone right now, so I'm not sure what's going on. Do you want us to try and get you on a better line, a better connection?
How's this?
Oh, that's 5x5. Let's do it that way instead. I hate speakerphones. I really do. Let me ask you about this. Should an elephant have the same rights as a human? And why is this question actually being asked in court in America?
Of course they shouldn't have the same rights as a human. They shouldn't have any rights at all. Humans have duties to treat animals properly because we are a moral species. But elephants are not persons. And the reason this has come up, and the reason I wrote about it in the National Review, is because there's a lawsuit in New York State that has gone to the highest court in that land. It's the Court of Appeals, which is like the Supreme Court. They call it the Court of Appeals. And the Court of Appeals of New York is going to decide whether an elephant in the Bronx Zoo named Happy is a person and should be given a writ of habeas corpus for illegal confinement, as if the Happy was a human being. And it really is a subversive and dangerous lawsuit because the idea is to break down the species barrier between human beings and animals.
Now, people might say, well, but if the animal isn't being treated properly, we should be concerned about that. You address that. Human beings do have an obligation to treat animals fairly. But I think people who might be inclined to say, well, give the animal some rights, don't understand the long-term implications. You study this. This is your stock in trade. What happens if we start to consider animals to have the same or equivalent rights to humans?
You're going to end up having animal rights fanatics bringing lawsuits on behalf of animals because the animals won't know about it, right? They'll be oblivious. But this is the idea. It's called animal standing, meaning they would have these fanatics would have standing to sue in court in the name of the animal. And so you would eventually end up with not only elephants suing because of supposedly improper confinement, you'd end up to the point where cattle could sue their ranchers, where lab animals could sue the laboratories that are conducting important medical research and so forth. The other thing that would be ironic about this is people who support this deny human exceptionalism. They say that humans are just another animal in the forest. But if animals have rights, only humans will be obliged to respect those rights and enforce those rights. Animals won't respect or enforce all and they certainly won't respect or enforce each other's rights. So it's really ironic, but what these animal rights fanatics don't understand is they're actually confirming human exceptionalism by trying to impose onerous duties on us, and since we're the only species that has duties because we are moral agents and animals are amoral.
Wes, when I read that line in your piece where you said, but some of us choose not to consume both natural and nutritious food out of a sense of moral duty, name one elephant who would ever do that. Wes, I've got a couple of great dogs. I've got an older dog. He's a Scotty. And I've got a younger dog. He's still a puppy. He's like 15, 16 months old. And that's Sir Winston. He's the Bernese Mountain Dog. And let me tell you something. The minute I read that line, I was thinking, if I have four treats in my hand and I'm planning to give two to one dog and two to the other one and they slip out of my hand, do you know that both of those dogs will eat all four of them? they don't have any sense of moral duty, even when it comes down to dividing up the treats, let alone the obligation of a jaguar not to attack an elephant out in the wild, or some other kind of wild animal attack an elephant or a deer or an elk or any other kind of animal. They got no compunctions about doing that if they're hungry.
Of course. And another example is a seal washes up on a beach, right?
Yep.
If any other animal that goes by that seal will either ignore that seal, because let's say it's a horse, the horse will ignore the seal, or if it's, we'll say, a bear, the bear might eat that seal. Human beings would rescue that seal. There's a huge difference between us and animals, and those people who try to erase that distinction are making a huge mistake.
I want to ask you about another issue that's come up as well. Is it true that China is actually murdering some of its own people for their organs, and they're doing it not just picking anybody, but they're picking people based on their religious beliefs?
Yes, it's the Falun Gong. The Falun Gong have been on the bad side of Chinese government since approximately 2001, 2002. And it has been well established in several reports that Falun Gong are arrested as political prisoners, they're tissue typed, and their organs are harvested for use in the Chinese black market. You can go to China, if you have enough money, and buy a liver and get it within a month without having to wait in line. When you do that, though, what you are doing is you are paying to have somebody murdered so that you can live and receive that person's organ. There have been plenty of, I've written about this quite a few times, and there have been plenty of reports about this. One of the best people who's reported on this is David Kilgore, who is a former member of Parliament of the Nation of Canada and is now a human rights activist. And he and a partner of his did a huge study. And they got evidence. Of course, the Chinese didn't allow them in, but they got all kinds of evidence that this was happening. For example, this is a quote from the report: Falun Gong prisoners who later got out of China testified that they were systematically blood tested and organ examined while in forced labor camps across the country. This could not have been for their health, since they were regularly tortured, but is necessary for organ transplants and for building a bank of live donors. There's another one. In a few cases, family members of Falun Gong practitioners were able to see mutilated corpses of their loved ones between death and cremation. Organs had been removed. We interviewed the ex-wife of a surgeon from Sichuan in Shenyang City, Liaoning. The surgeon told her that he had removed corneas from 2,000 Falun Gong prisoners between 2001 and 2003. He made it clear to her that none of these sources survived because different surgeons removed other organs and their bodies were then burned. There is no doubt that this has been happening.
And all of this, and by the way, I'll give props and kudos. I don't follow sports that closely, but Enes Kanter, who's one of the, he's the center for the NBA's Boston Celtics, he's actually brought attention to this, and he's been very direct. While a lot of people are kowtowing to the Chinese, he stood up and said, stop murdering for organs. It's a crime against humanity. He deserves some credit for doing it, especially when he knows that the NBA, the league that he plays for, has been kowtowing to the Chinese, and they're very concerned about messing up their commercial opportunities with China. That's Wesley Smith. He's an author and a senior fellow at the Discovery Institute Center on Human Exceptionalism. Wesley, it's always a pleasure to have you on the program. It is First Amendment Friday. When we come back, I'll get to your phone calls and your emails, and every subject is fair game at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@larslarson.com. And this segment is brought to you by NickShivers.com. To sell your home immediately, go to NickShivers.com for details. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show on a First Amendment Friday, live on the Radio Northwest Network. We're glad to get your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. And I'll get to those in just a moment. First, our Twitter poll. Is Joe Biden's Build Back Better passed in the early morning hours today? Is it worth roughly $60,000 in debt that it's going to cost every single American family? And let me explain how I get to that number so you understand this. By the way, the Twitter poll is brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at ultimatetruckservice.com. Now, you'd be forgiven if you said, all this budget stuff is really confusing. We haven't even got to the federal budget yet. We had something like 1.8 or 1.9 trillion spent by the Congress back in March. Then we had the infrastructure bill. That was 10 days ago or so. That was 1.2 trillion, depending on how you count the numbers. Then you've got this one that they say is just short of 2 trillion. Although if you look, the fancy accounting that they use to get to 2 trillion, it's here's what they do. They say we're going to have all these programs. They're going to operate for 10 years, but we only want to put 2 years of payments for them in the plan. It would be like if your son or daughter got to the age of 18 and said, Mom and Dad, I'm going to move out. And they said, well, how are you going to do that? How are you going to have the money to move out? And he said, well, I'm going to assume that I'm only going to have to pay my car payment for the next 6 months. And if you said, but your car payment goes on for 6 years, you say, yeah, but in my budget, it works better if I only put 6 months of car payments into my budget about how I'm going to earn enough money to be able to do this. Well, of course it does. If you don't count the actual costs that you're going to incur, that's the kind of magic they're doing. The actual cost of this thing is a little over $5 trillion. Now, let me tell you a trick that I use, because when you hear about these billions and trillions and all this, it gets to where you go, I don't even know how much money that is. And I get lots of people saying, well, compare it to the number of seconds in 1,000 years. Let me tell you a better way to do that. Every time you hear the government talk in America, for the country, talk about spending $1 billion, that is $3 from every man, woman, and child in America. Okay, that'd be $12 for a family of four. You say, well, what about $1 trillion? What about $1 trillion? Well, that's 1,000 times as much. That means every time the government spends $1 trillion, that is $3,000 for every man, woman, and child in America. Again, if you're a family of four, they are obligating you to pay $12,000. It has to come from somewhere. Now, maybe you pay a lot of federal taxes, maybe you don't. It's $12,000 that has to come from everybody. And for everybody who works and doesn't pay federal taxes, that's about half the workers in America, then the other half has to pay more. Well, what if they're talking about $5 trillion? Well, that math is easy. That means every single person in America, every man, woman, and child, a plan at $5 trillion is going to cost about $15,000 per person for every man, woman, and child. So for a family of four, that's 60 grand. That's how I get to that number. Now, with that in mind, that's what they're doing, is Build Back Better worth $60,000 in debt for every single American family. Now, remember, that doesn't count the money they already spent in March, the $1.8 trillion. The $1.2 trillion from the infrastructure bill that you heard about 2 weeks ago, it doesn't count that. And then the regular federal budget to actually operate the federal government and pay for Medicare and Social Security and the Pentagon and everything else doesn't count any of that. Total planned spending by the Biden administration is between $8 and $9 trillion. That's what they're talking about spending. To your calls now. Let me go to Rob first. Hey, Rob, you've got an effort going on. Would you mind tell my audience what it is and where do you stand with the number of signatures you've gathered so far?
Yeah, Lars, thanks for having me. I'm standing on the sidewalk. Hopefully you can hear me okay. Holding my sign to sign a petition. It's a pop-up location right here in Orchards near Fred Meyer's. And it's funny, we talked yesterday about it, but I forgot to tell your listeners how many signatures. So I wanted to let everyone know right now we stand at 5,720 signatures in hand. We need 8,311. And so I'm just thankful. You can go to the Big Gun Show this weekend. You can come to these pop-ups in Orchards. And or go to our website at clarkcountygroup.com.
But gee, Rob, I maybe you didn't hear my question. Would you mind telling the people listening what the effort is for?
Oh, yeah. Sorry, yeah. Lars. So the Clark County petition, it's a mini initiative petition in which we are asking people to sign that will ban all discriminatory mandates that discriminate against people's medical health status or violates their health privacy.
That's a great effort, and I hope you get out and sign it. As he said, at the gun show, they'll be gathering signatures. Let's go to James. Hey, James, it's First Amendment Friday. What's on your mind today?
Hey, Lars, thanks for taking my call, and Bryce, thank you, too. The reason I call in is because I've been at war on Twitter with Twitter followers who are on the side of this kid who got shot in the head with a rubber bullet back last year during a protest.
This was he got shot with the less lethal round, and because he showed up at a protest and the police declared it an illegal gathering, and they used some I think it wasn't a smoke grenade or a tear gas grenade of some kind. He got hit in the head by.
It was actually a I guess everyone on the Twitter saying rubber bullet, an actual rubber bullet.
Okay, a less lethal round. So what about it? What are you trying to do?
I am ticked off about it. I don't understand how this kid can get a lawsuit in front of a judge. I'm not a lawyer, but doesn't it have to go to a judge to take it to trial? Doesn't it have to,
well,
to take it to court?
Well, look, let's start with this, James. In America, anyone can sue anyone for anything. Okay, that's where you start. And then you go to a lawyer and he says, I'll file the suit, but you don't have a snowball's chance of winning it. And you may decide not to do it. But if you bring the suit gets heard. And it gets heard either by a judge or by a jury, and then they decide whether or not you have a case. In some cases, a judge may throw a suit out, but he has the right to sue. Whether or not he has a right to win, the problem is... What's that?
I said, well, now you have NBC, CNN, and you got all those people who are going to give the media attention to this kid and make him look like he was the victim. First off, I was downtown only a couple of times. I live in Oregon City.
Okay, but James, you're going into a lot of detail. I need you to get to your point, please.
Okay. My point is this kid should not have a lawsuit. These kids need to obey the law. They need to listen to what the cops and the feds say. They warned them several times to leave the premises. Let's say he was peaceful. There's peaceful protesters. There's looters. Sorry, but if the looters are going around destroying stuff around you and you're sticking around, it's kind of like, let's say your best friend goes into the store. And
you put yourself in harm's way. No, it makes sense that you put yourself in harm's way. Let me sneak in one more. Let's go to Steve in Kelso. Steve, you're going to have to make it quick on First Amendment Friday. What's on your mind?
Okay, Lars. Hey, I was wanting to do a little comparison on wind and solar versus fossil fuels, and the Chinese, I don't believe that they're going to the wind and solar like they're trying to push on us.
They're not. They're selling us the panels, but they're building coal and nuclear right now.
Right. And what happens, Lars, when you get a couple million of these cars on here that are all electric cars, and let's say we get an EMP that hits the atmosphere.
Yeah, electromagnetic pulse that wipes out the entire grid. That's a problem. But the bigger problem, Steve, is before you even get to an EMP, the Northwest is already running up against power shortages so bad that the Northwest Power Planning Council, which is a government agency, says we went from about 2% chance of the loss of the grid to about a 7% chance this year and an even higher chance in the years in the future. Back in a moment, I'll get to your phone calls and emails. And Joe Biden uses double talk to signal to the rioters out in the streets. I'll give you his actual statement coming up next. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's First Amendment Friday. Glad to get your phone calls and your emails. And it is a real pleasure to have you. If you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, it's right here every day at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. I want to tell you something that today, I thought, well, Joe Biden is going to say something abundantly stupid about the decision by the jury to find Kyle Rittenhouse not guilty, which was the right decision. And on his way back into the White House, because he'd been out for a colonoscopy, and yes, I think the doctors found where his head was during that colonoscopy, but he made this comment. It was only 20 words. He said, well, that's what the jury decided, and we have to stick by the jury. But the White House itself issued something that was a bit longer than that and a bit of a different message. Here's what was put out over the signature or under the name of Joe Biden by the White House. While the verdict in Kenosha will leave many Americans feeling angry and concerned, myself included. We must acknowledge that the jury has spoken. Now, talk about a two-faced message. So in one voice, he's saying the jury has spoken. That's what he told reporters outside. But he also, in this formal statement from the White House, says this decision will leave many Americans angry, myself included. Why is he angry when a jury looked at all the evidence and decided Kyle Rittenhouse committed no crime? He goes on to say, I ran on a promise to bring Americans together because I believe that what unites us is far greater than what divides us, which sounds like a Hallmark card. I know that we're not going to heal our country's wounds overnight, but I remain steadfast in my commitment to doing everything in my power to ensure that every American is treated equally with fairness and dignity under the law. You mean like having the president of the United States not call, basically saying a not guilty finding for Kyle Rittenhouse makes the president angry? You mean like treating people equally like that? This kind of nonsense, this dog whistling from Joe Biden. This, I know somebody else probably wrote this for him because he was out getting his colonoscopy. Let's go to John, who's a naysayer. John, you know we always put naysayers first. What in the world could you and I possibly disagree about today?
Well, I'm a longtime listener, first-time caller, and I actually am in favor of the 2 cents a gallon gas tax. Absolutely.
Why?
Because I would much rather see that than I would them putting a tracking device on my vehicle and charging me so much a mile, because I already deal with that with a truck.
Stop for a second, John. What gave you the impression that they weren't going to both raise the gas tax and put a tracking device on your truck? Because they plan to do both.
Okay, I'm not talking about the truck, because I pay 11 cents a mile right now just to run the thing. And they are talking about both? I did not know that.
No, of course they are. Because, John, they realize that as we change to other kinds of energy to drive vehicles, and that is happening, it's not happening as fast as they want to mandate it, because Jay Inslee and Kate Brown both want to say, you aren't going to have the choice to choose a diesel, gasoline, or electric vehicle. You're going to be forced to do it on our schedule. And they've already communicated that. And they're going to do the same thing to business. So number one, they're going to take away your choice of what kind of vehicle, what kind of fuel you want to use. But while you're still using gas and diesel, you watch them go to vehicle miles traveled. They're already going to it. They gave a trial run of it, and it turned out to be amazingly unpopular. Now, do you know what a Democrat government does with something that's amazingly unpopular? They make it mandatory. Yeah. They always make it mandatory. So if you think you're trading, I can buy them for 2 cents. If I give you the 2 cents a gallon, will you leave me alone? The answer is they're not going to leave you alone. And not only that, John, but you know that they're going to start tolling the highways. They've already said we're moving ahead with it, despite the fact that they've heard from all the citizens who show up at these town halls they have say, don't do this. So do you know what a Democrat government does when citizens say, don't do this? They go ahead and do it.
And they do more of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. If it doesn't work, you do more of it. Yeah.
Yeah. If something is really working badly, the Democrats think you need twice as much of it.
Yeah. I'm glad you explained that, because I did not know that. I was just figuring, you know, give them their 2 cents, you know, leave me alone as far as, you know, no. I already pay it on the truck, but I didn't want it on my vehicle.
Well, do you know? You know, this gets a little down the rabbit hole, John. But do you know the great irony of the vehicle miles traveled tax that they intend to impose? It's that right now, you said you figure it costs you, well, if you're driving a truck that, say, gets 10 miles a gallon, just make the math easy, right? So how much are you paying? You're paying 38. It's the new tax is going to be 38 cents per gallon. So if you get 10 miles to the gallon, you're already paying 4 cents a mile in state gas taxes to drive down the road. And you say, 4 cents? Well, the vehicle miles traveled is offering to let me do it for a cent and a half. Do you know who's not allowed to use vehicle miles traveled right now? Trucks like that, you know, because it would be an economic benefit to you. They don't want it to be an economic benefit to you. They want to suck more dollars out of your pocket. Kate Brown does that, you know, with a vengeance.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I thank you for explaining that, because I was unaware of it. But
if you worry about being monitored, John, do you know what all those tracking, as you drive down the highway, they say, well, they'll have to put up toll plazas. They're not going to put up toll plazas. Seattle already has this. They have cameras. They're going to take a picture of your license plate and say, John drove through this point at 6:52 a.m. on Tuesday morning. And we know how fast you're going. We know what direction you're going. We know the registration on your vehicle. We know the home address of the person driving or who owns the vehicle. They're going to be tracking you six ways from Sunday. Take my word for it. And they're going to suck more dollars out of your pocket.